prepared, and made sufficiently drunk in order to do all manner of mischief. I began preaching between 4 and 5, none hindered or interrupted at all. We had a blessed opportunity, and the hearts of many were exceedingly comforted. I wondered what was become of the mob, but we were quickly informed they mistook the place, imagining I should alight, as I used to do, at William Stone's house, and had summoned by drum all their forces together to meet me at my coming. But Mr. Swindles innocently carrying me to the other end of the town, they did not find their mistake till I had done preaching, so that the hindering this, which was one of their designs, was utterly disappointed. However, they attended us from the preaching house to William Stone's, throwing dirt, stones, and clods in abundance, but they could not hurt us. Only Mr. Swindles had a little dirt on his coat, and I a few specks on my hat. A shower of stones. After we were going into the house, they began throwing great stones in order to break the door. But perceiving this would require some time, they dropped that design for the present. They first broke all the tiles on the penthouse over the door, and then poured in a shower of stones at the windows. One of their captains, in his great zeal, had followed us into the house and was now shut in with us. He did not like this and would fain have got out, but it was not possible. So he kept as close to me as he could, thinking himself safe when he was near me, but staying a little behind. When I went up two pairs of stairs and stood close on one side where we were a little sheltered, a large stone struck him on the forehead, and the blood spouted out like a stream. He cried out, "Oh, sir, are we to die tonight? What must I do? What must I do?" I said, "Pray to God. He is able to deliver you from all danger." He took my advice and began praying in such a manner as he had scarcely done ever since he was born. Mr. Swindles and I then went to prayer, after which I told him, "We must not stay here. We must go down immediately." He said, "Sir, we cannot stir. You see how the stones fly about." I walked straight through the room and down the stairs, and not a stone came in till we were at the bottom. The mob had just broken open the door when we came into the lower room, and exactly while they burst in at one door, we walked out at the other. Nor did one man take any notice of us, though we were within 5 yards of each other. A horrible proposition. They filled the house at once and proposed setting it on fire, but one of them, happening to remember that his own house was next, with much ado persuaded them not to do it. Hearing one of them cry out, "They are gone over the grounds," I thought the advice was good. So we went over the grounds to the farther end of the town, where Abraham Jenkins waited and undertook to guide us to Oak Hill. I was riding on in Shepton Lane, it being now quite dark, when he cried out, come down from the bank." I did as I was bidden, but the bank being high and the side very nearly perpendicular, I came down all at once, my horse and I tumbling one over another. But we both rose unhurt. Saturday, April 9. I preached in Conneaut, a few miles from Althone. Many heard, but I doubt felt nothing. The Shannon comes within a mile of the house where I preached. I think there is not another such river in Europe. It is here 10 or 12 miles over, though scarcely 30 miles from its fountainhead. There are many islands in it, once well inhabited, but now mostly desolate. In almost every one is the ruins of a church, in one the remains of no less than 7. I fear God has still a controversy with this land, because it is defiled with blood. Incidents in Ireland, Sunday the 10th, Easter Day. Never was such a congregation seen before at the sacrament in Athlone. I preached at 3. Abundance of papists flocked to hear, so that the priest, seeing his command did not avail, came in person at 6 and drove them away before him like a flock of sheep. Tuesday the 12th, I rode to Clara, where I was quickly informed that there was to begin in an hour's time a famous cockfight, to which almost all the country was coming from every side. Hoping to engage some part of them in a better employ, I began preaching in the street as soon as possible. 100 or 200 stopped and listened a while, and pulled off their hats and forgot their diversion. The congregation at Tullamore in the evening was larger than ever before, and deep attention sat on every face. Toward the latter end of the sermon there began a violent storm of hail. I desired the people to cover their heads, but the greater part of them would not, nor did anyone go away till I concluded my discourse. Friday the 15th, I rode to Edenbury. Abundance of people were quickly gathered together. Having been disturbed in the night by Mr. Swindles, who lay with me and had a kind of apoplectic fit, I was not at all well about noon when I began to preach in a large walk on one side of the town. The sun shone hot upon my head, which had been aching all the day. But I forgot this before I had spoken long, and when I had finished my discourse, I left all my weariness and pain behind and rode on in perfect health to Dublin. Saturday the 23rd. I read some hours an extremely dull book, Sir James Ware's Antiquities of Ireland. By the vast number of ruins which are seen in all parts, I had always suspected what he sows at large, namely, that in ancient times it was more populous, tenfold, than it is now, many that were large cities being now ruinous heaps, many shrunk into inconsiderable villages. I visited one in the afternoon who was ill of a fever and lay in a very close room. While I was near him, I found myself not well. After my return home, I felt my stomach out of order, but I imagined it was not worth any notice and would pass off before the morning. Wesley lives on Apple Tea. Sunday the 24th, I preached at Skinner's Alley at 5 and on Oxmantown Green at 8. I was weak in body, but was greatly revived by the seriousness and earnestness of the congregation. Resolving to improve the opportunity, I gave notice of preaching there again in the afternoon, which I did to a congregation much more numerous and equally attentive. As I came home, I was glad to lie down, having a quinsy attended with fever. However, when the society met, I made a shift to creep in among them. Immediately, my voice was restored. I spoke without pain for nearly an hour altogether, and great was our rejoicing over each other, knowing that God would order all things well. Monday the 25th. Finding my fever greatly increased, I judged it would be best to keep my bed and to live a while on apples and apple tea. On Tuesday I was quite well and should have preached, but that Dr. Rudy, who had been with me twice, insisted on my resting for a time. I read today what is accounted the most correct history of St. Patrick that is extant, and on the maturest consideration, I was much inclined to believe that St. Patrick and St. George were of one family. The whole story smells strong of romance. A determined preacher. Thursday the 28th was the day fixed for my going into the country, but all about me began to cry out, "Sure you will not go today. See how the rain pours down?" I told them I must keep my word if possible. But before 5, the man of whom I had bespoken a horse sent word that his horse should not go out in such a day. I sent one who brought him to a better mind. So about 6 I took horse. About 9 I called at Kilcock. Between 1 and 2 we came to Kinnegad. My strength was now pretty well exhausted, so that when we mounted again after resting an hour, it was as much as I could do to sit my horse. We had nearly 11 Irish measured miles to ride, which are equal to 14 English. We got over them pretty well in 3 hours, and by 6 reached Tyrrell's Pass. At 7 I recovered my strength so as to preach and meet the society, which began now to be at a stand with regard to number, but not with regard to the grace of God. Friday the 29th, I rode to Temple Macatir and thence toward Athlone. We came at least an hour before we were expected. Nevertheless, we were met by many of our brethren. The first I saw about 2 miles from the town were a dozen little boys running with all their might, some bareheaded, some barefooted, and some bare-legged, so they had their desire of speaking to me first, the others being still behind. Zealous Protestants. Tuesday, May 3rd, I rode to Birr, 20 miles from Athlone, and the key of the session house not being found, declared, "The grace of our Lord Jesus Christ in the street to a dull, rude, senseless multitude. Many laughed the greater part of the time. Some went away just in the middle of a sentence. And yet when one cried out, a Carmelite friar, clerk to the priest, "You lie, you lie," the zealous Protestants cried out, "Knock him down," and it was not sooner said than done. I saw some bustle, but knew not what was the matter till the whole was over. In the evening we rode to Ballaboy. There being no house that could contain the congregation, I preached here also in the street. I was afraid in a new place there would be but few in the morning, but there was a considerable number, and such a blessing as I had scarcely found since I landed in Ireland. Sunday the 15th, Dublin. Finding my strength greatly restored, I preached at 5 and at 8 on Oxmantown Green. I expected to sail as soon as I had done, but the captains, putting it off, as their manner is, gave me an opportunity of declaring the gospel of peace to a still larger congregation in the evening. One of them, after listening some time, cried out, shaking his head, "Aye, he is a Jesuit, that's plain." To which a popish priest who happened to be near replied aloud, "No, he is not. I would to God he was." Monday the 16th, observing a large congregation in the evening and many strangers among them, I preached more roughly than ever I had done in Dublin on those awful words, "What shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" Mark 8:37. Wednesday the 18th, we took ship. The wind was small in the afternoon, but exceedingly high toward night. About 8, I laid me down on the quarterdeck. I was soon wet from head to foot, but I took no cold at all. About 4 in the morning, we landed at Holyhead, and in the evening reached Carnarvon. Friday, August 12th, in riding to Newcastle, I finished the 10th Iliad of Homer. What an amazing genius had this man, to write with such strength of thought and beauty of expression when he had none to go before him. And what a vein of piety runs through his whole work, in spite of his pagan prejudices. Yet one cannot but observe such improprieties intermixed as are shocking to the last degree. Wesley protests against lawlessness. Thursday 25th, I rode with Mr. Bimshaw to Roughly. At 12:30, I began to preach. I had about half finished my discourse when the mob came pouring down the hill like a torrent. After exchanging a few words with their captain to prevent any contest, I went with him as he required. When we came to Barrowford, 2 miles off, the whole army drew up in battle array before the house into which I was carried with 2 or 3 of my friends. After I had been detained above an hour, their captain went out, and I followed him and desired him to conduct me whence I came. He said he would, but the mob soon followed after, at which he was so enraged that he must needs turn back to fight them, and so left me alone. A further account is contained in the following letter, which I wrote the next morning. Widdop, August 26, 1748. Sir, yesterday between 12 and 1 o'clock, while I was speaking to some quiet people, without any noise or tumult, a drunken rabble came with clubs and staves in a tumultuous and riotous manner, the captain of whom, Richard B. by name, said he was a deputy constable and that he was come to bring me to you. I went with him, but I had scarcely gone 10 yards when a man of his company struck me with his fist in the face with all his might. Quickly after, another threw his stick at my head. I then made a little stand, but another of your champions, cursing and swearing in the most shocking manner, and flourishing his club over his head, cried out, "Bring him away." With such convoy I walked to Barrowford, where they informed me you were, their drummer going before to draw all the rabble together from all quarters. When your deputy had brought me into the house, he permitted Mr. Grimshaw, the minister of Haworth, Mr. Colbeck of Keighley, and one more to be with me, promising that none should hurt them. Soon after, you and your friends came in and required me to promise I would come to Roughly no more. I told you I would sooner cut off my hand than make any such promise. Neither would I promise that none of my friends should come. After abundance of rambling discourse, for I could keep none of you long to any one point, from about 1 o'clock till about 3 and 4, in which one of you frankly said, "No, we will not be like Gamaliel. We will proceed like the Jews." You seemed a little satisfied with my saying, "I will not preach it roughly at this time." You then undertook to quiet the mob to whom you went and spoke a few words, and their noise immediately ceased. I then walked out with you at the back door, beaten by the mob. I should have mentioned that I had several times before desired you to let me go, but in vain, and that when I attempted to go with Richard B., the mob immediately followed with oaths, curses, and stones, that one of them beat me down to the ground, and when I rose again, the whole body came about me like lions and forced me back into the house. While you and I went out at one door, Mr. Grimshaw and Mr. Colbeck went out at the other. The mob immediately closed them in, tossing them to and fro with the utmost violence, threw Mr. Grimshaw down, and loaded them both with dirt and mire of every kind, not one of your friends offering to call off your bloodhounds from the pursuit. The other quiet, harmless people who followed me at a distance to see what the end would be, they treated still worse, not only by the connivance, but by the express order of your deputy. They made them run for their lives amidst showers of dirt and stones without any regard to age or sex. Some of them they trampled in the mire and dragged by their hair, particularly Mr. Mackford, who came with me from Newcastle. Many they beat with their clubs without mercy. One they forced to leap down, or they would have thrown him headlong from a rock 10 or 12 feet high into the river. And when he crawled out wet and bruised, they swore they would throw him in again, which they were hardly persuaded not to do. All this time you sat well pleased close to the place, not attempting in the least to hinder them. And all this time you were talking of justice and law. Alas, sir, suppose we were dissenters, which I deny. Suppose we were Jews or Turks. Are we not to have the benefit of the laws of our country? Proceed against us by the law, if you can or dare, but not by lawless violence. Not by making a drunken, cursing, swearing, riotous mob, both judge, jury, and executioner. This is flat rebellion against God and the King, as you may possibly find out to your cost. Defending field preaching. Between 4 and 5 we set out from Roughly, but observing several parties of men upon the hills and suspecting their design, we put on and passed the lane they were making for before they came. One of our brothers, not riding so fast, was intercepted by them. They immediately knocked him down, and how it was that he got from among them, he knew not. Before 7, we reached Widdop. The news of what had passed at Barrowford made us all friends. The person in whose house Mr. B. preached sent and begged I would preach there, which I did at 8. To such a congregation as none could have expected on so short a warning. He invited us also to lodge at his house, and all jealousies vanished away. Sunday the 28th, I was invited by Mr. Yu, the minister of Goodshaw, to preach in his church. I began reading prayers at 7, but perceiving the church would scarcely contain half of the congregation, after prayers I went out, and standing on the churchyard wall, in a place shaded from the sun, explained and enforced those words in the second lesson, "Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." Acts 26:38. I wonder at those who still talk so loud of the indecency of field preaching. The highest indecency is in St. Paul's Church, when a considerable part of the congregation are asleep, or talking, or looking about, not minding a word the preacher says. On the other hand, there is the highest decency in a churchyard or field, when the whole congregation behave and look as if they saw the judge of all and heard him speaking from heaven.